I'm Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. Today, conversations about language, sexuality, and power. We talk with a former video vixen on why she chooses to kiss and tell in her best-selling books, and the Mocha Moms on teaching boundaries and respect. But first, a newsmaker interview about a story that rocked the country. Last week, we talked about Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas's new memoir. In it, and during the publicity blitz that followed its release, Thomas continued to deny that he behaved inappropriately toward Anita Hill, the former co-worker and law professor whose detailed descriptions of sexual harassment threw Thomas's 1991 confirmation hearings into turmoil and threw the country into an emotional debate about race and gender. Here's a clip from the hearings and Steve Croft's interview with Justice Thomas from the news program 60 Minutes.
After a brief discussion of work, he would turn the conversation to a discussion of sexual matters. His conversations were very vivid.
You denied all of the allegations.
Oh, absolutely. From day one, it didn't happen. I mean, so if somebody makes a broad allegation against you, what would you do?
Ask him to prove it, I guess.
Yeah.
But Anita Hill was not the only person to make allegations of sexual harassment against Clarence Thomas. Angela Wright was the director of public affairs at the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission from March of 1984 until March of 1985. She told Senate Judiciary Committee investigators that Thomas pressured her for dates, made comments about her body, asked about her bra size, and showed up uninvited at her apartment. But although she was subpoenaed to appear before the Senate Judiciary Committee during Clarence Thomas's confirmation hearings, along with another employee whom she told about the behavior, Wright was never called to testify. She has spoken rarely about those events since. She joins us now from Charlotte, North Carolina. Angela Wright, welcome. Thanks for speaking with us.
Thank you for having me, Michelle.
And I think we should disclose that you made two requests. You insisted on being interviewed live, and you have since married, but we are not using your married name. We're using the name that you were known by at the time of the hearings, correct?
That is correct.
First of all, I'd like to ask, why didn't you testify? You were subpoenaed to come to Washington. You were interviewed. Your interview was placed in the record, but you were never called. Now, Republican Alan Simpson at the time said you got cold feet. Did you get cold feet?
No, absolutely not, Michelle. I was fully prepared to testify. I realized it was not going to be easy, but I was once I was there, I was committed to going through with the process. The only reason I didn't testify is because I wasn't called to testify. I was there for 3 days waiting with my attorneys for the Judiciary Committee to call me, and it was their decision. At one point, I think it may have been like 2 a.m., on a Monday morning, after we'd been there for 3 days, they decided that they really didn't need my testimony, but there was just so much maneuvering behind the scenes. They wanted me to say that, please let me out of the subpoena. And then it was, you know, they wanted it to portray me as having cold feet and backing out. And when we refused that deal, they finally offered me the opportunity to at least put my statement in the record. I think ultimately what happened is that they were just afraid to call me. The Democrats were afraid and the Republicans, I think.
How did your story come to light to begin with about your experience at the EEOC?
There again is another misconception. I worked at the Charlotte Observer at the time. I was an editor there. And I was talking with one of the other managing editors about becoming a columnist. And for several days I'd been he said to me, well, write some columns and let's see what you got. So for several days I'd written columns on just things that I felt passionate about, things like, you know, the proper way to train puppies and things like that. And he kept saying, you need something more topical. And shortly thereafter, I had gone home, turned on CNN and saw Anita Hill standing there. I was aware, of course, that the Thomas hearings were going on, but they didn't mean anything to me. So the next day after I saw Anita Hill at her news conference, I went back to work and I said, here's a column I can write for you to look at. It's topical. I have some knowledge about this situation. And it was not a column that was ever intended to be published. It was simply responding to what the editor had said to me, which is, let me see you write something topical. So I wrote the column based on what my experience had been. And essentially, I said in that column, you know, I fully believe Anita Hill. I didn't know her. I had never met her. But I knew that Clarence Thomas was capable because he had made similar remarks to me and in my presence about my body and other women's bodies. And he did, he was very egotistical, and he did pressure me to date him, and he did drop by the house when unannounced. And so I said these things in the column and responded some to, there was an some comment from one of the senators of, why didn't she just leave? And I think in the column I said, you know, the thing that people need to understand is that they're, you know, absent crossing certain boundaries, if you're not being physically attacked or physically pressured, then, you know, it's pretty easy to ignore it and go on about your business.
You're saying you didn't feel afraid or intimidated. You just didn't, you found it irritating. Is that
about
right?
It was irritating. It was inappropriate, but it wasn't the kind of thing that would make me go running, screaming, you know, dropping my job and you know, hitting the unemployment line. It wasn't that kind of pressure.
But you were fired. Oh, so, well, let's just go back to the point that you were making mm-hmm. earlier. You're saying that you never intended for this information to become public. This column was not meant to be published. How did it become public? Do you have any idea how the Senate Judiciary Committee became aware of the column?
Yeah, I suspect that someone in my office, in the newsroom, shared that column with the Senate Judiciary Committee. It was not me. I got a phone call later in the day from a member of Biden's staff. And actually, my thought was, wow, they're finally doing what they were supposed to do. They're finally now checking with people who were close to Clarence Thomas and doing this background check that they tried to circumvent initially. When I answered the phone and I discovered that they actually had the column, I was really surprised by that. And they didn't tell me where it came from. But, you know, subsequently, we were able to figure out where it had come from. And I'm pretty confident that someone in the newsroom leaked it, because there was one reporter that I had a close relationship with, and we talked about politics all the time. And I discussed with him the fact that I was writing this column. And, you know, he, I'm confident, was instrumental in getting it to Biden's staff. And after that, when they called me, I said, I have no problems talking with you. And so I talked with them, and things progressed from that point.